Before the Delta surge, Black and Hispanic Americans were nearly three times more likely to be hospitalized and twice as likely to die from COVID than white Americans. That's according to the CDC. And while the more infectious Delta strain has pushed more minorities to get vaccinated, advocates say not enough shots are getting into arms to close the racial gap on new infections and hospitalizations. Joining me now is Dr. Sachin Jain, president and CEO of Scan Health Plan. We're also joined by our health reporter, Anjali Kamlani. Thanks to you both for being with us. Dr. Jain, just, I guess, bring us up to date on what vaccination rates are like right now among minority communities in this country.
So vaccination rates are trending up right now for all communities, but at the same time, we continue to see persistent gaps between African-Americans and Latinx members of our community when you compare them to Caucasian members. So we, as a health plan, have made a major focus reducing that disparity. And over the last several months, we've been able to use a number of different strategies to reduce our disparities across multiple different populations, including Black, Latinx, and low-income members of our health plan, because we believe that this is the number one thing we can do to support the health of the patients that we serve.
Dr. Jain, want to ask you a little bit about another program that I know is near and dear to your heart, and that is the efforts on homelessness. On one hand, we heard the U.S. Supreme Court come down with the decision that the CDC's eviction moratorium was more or less government overreach, and it has to end. And it's consistent with what we've seen across the board, whether you're looking at Florida or Texas and how the courts there have handled mask mandates, or rather the bans on some of these mandates. So I just wonder if you could parse through that and sort of what the implications of this are as you watch the homelessness.
I think one of the biggest challenges that we have in our society is we've mischaracterized homelessness as a housing issue, when in fact, I do believe it is a healthcare issue first and foremost. I think many people find themselves homeless because of some underlying healthcare issues, whether they be chronic diseases that are untreated, mental health issues, addiction. And we don't necessarily have a healthcare system that is particularly good at proactively addressing these issues. And as a result, many people find themselves untreated and homeless. At the same time, I think being homeless actually exacerbates underlying chronic disease and illness. I think one of the things we have to do is really reframe this issue away from being a housing supply issue and start to think about it more like the healthcare issue that it is. And if you actually redefine how we solve this issue, it'll actually change how we think about solving it. One of the things that we've focused on is building new sustainable payment models that will allow us to actually deliver street-based healthcare to people who are experiencing homelessness. And we think, you know, in the context of COVID-19, in the context of all of these regulatory challenges, these are the types of solutions that are ultimately going to help address this issue.
Tell me a little bit more about how you're able to do that, because, you know, if you just look at it at face value, you're a Medicare Advantage plan. Why are you getting involved in this, and how are you able to basically roll out these programs, reimburse for them, et cetera?
Well, it really goes down to how Medicare Advantage plans are actually reimbursed for healthcare services. Traditional payment for healthcare is fee for service. If you get sick and you land in a hospital, you'll get paid. The hospital gets reimbursed for the care that is delivered to the patient. In Medicare Advantage, many provider groups operate under what's called prospective payment. And so what we're doing is wherein you take the total cost of healthcare, the average total cost of healthcare for a year, you give it to a provider group, and then that provider group manages all of your care, your outpatient care, your inpatient care. In doing so, it creates a much greater incentive towards prevention. And that's why we founded this group, Healthcare in Action, which is part of the SCAN group and a sister entity to SCAN Health Plan, is to allow us to do more of the intensive outpatient management that's less expensive and better for patients, as opposed to paying for costly hospitalizations. So it's really cost shifting away from expensive inpatient care that is oftentimes the side effect of bad outpatient care to investing more heavily in outpatient care for patients.
You know, Doctor, I just want to get back to the vaccination among minorities issue for a moment and how, you know, what needs to be done to convince that segment of the population to get the shot. Do you believe that it's going to have to come from friends and leaders within the community and people that those minority groups trust versus even, say, science and doctors?
I think it's a multi-pronged strategy. I think you're absolutely right. I think community leaders have an important role to play in reducing, in addressing the misinformation that exists around COVID vaccinations. I think it's also very important for us to make it as easy as possible. One of the things that we did at SCAN was we partnered with a company called MedArrive that actually delivers home-based vaccinations to any of our patients who want them. And this actually reduces a substantial barrier. Some people say, I'm not necessarily willing to go out there. They're afraid of actually getting vaccinated. They're afraid of actually being in the community. We've made people afraid of actually leaving their homes. And so by actually sending the vaccination into the home in many affected communities, we're actually able to increase vaccination rates. And so I think that's been an important strategy. The other thing is just making information as easily available as possible. I think people have multiple sources of information and they don't know who to trust anymore. And, you know, one of the things we have as a longstanding nonprofit trusted health plan in the community is we have that trust with patients. And so we have put ourselves forward as a source of information and have a 24/7 vaccine access line. And we will go so far as actually scheduling the appointment for the individual, which, again, is another barrier. If you've actually tried to get vaccinated, you know how difficult it sometimes is to use online systems, to call a pharmacy. There's oftentimes no one available to answer the call for you. We're doing all of that hard work for you. And so by actually making ourselves that available, making it easier to actually access the vaccination, we're lowering the barriers that many people in low-income communities actually face.
I want to get your thoughts on something really quickly, Dr. Jane, and that is just generally the federal government messaging and how two parts, so you can choose which part you want to address. But on one hand, we have reports now that we may have boosters 5 months after, recommendations for 5 months after the initial course. But there's also been a decision about 8 months and then 6 months and how confusing that might be and what you have to do to get through that. Simultaneously, we're looking at, you know, going back to the Florida and Texas, the idea of mandates coming from guidance in most of the rest of the country. And then you have sort of state level politicians deciding against that and in fact, taking just as hard a stance against that. How do you manage all of that?
Yeah, so I having served in government, I have a lot of compassion for people who are forced to make communicate a lot of messages with imperfect information. And that is what this pandemic has been. It's been an effort in kind of mass communications with imperfect information that's changing on a daily basis. I think we have to have a lot of, tolerance for new information and tolerance for changes in that information. I think sometimes the whiplash that people feel is an unfortunate side effect of changing information, but that is the reality of the times that we're in. And so I think our job as leaders, as public health leaders, is to continue to evolve the messaging based on new information and continue to express humility about the information. I think one of the challenges that we've seen in the public health messaging is people express a level of definitiveness that is inappropriate for the level of information that we have at the time. And so every time I talk about this, I say, well, this is the best information we have right now, but as information evolves, our approach may change. And I think that's been a critical missing piece, as we've seen too many individuals making too many definitive statements absent, a full view of what's actually happening and absent the humility around the evolving science and epidemiology. And so, again, I think my advice to anyone who's making any kind of public health proclamations at this point, whether they're political or, public health officials, is to just continue to express that humility. I think that humility ultimately builds trust with people. When you are highly definitive and then you change your message a week later in the face of new information, that's when you start to, I think, amplify the mistrust that many people are feeling right now towards public health officials and government officials.
All right. Great insights there, Dr. Sachin Jain of SCAN Health Plan. And of course, our health reporter, Anjali Kamlani. Thanks so much.